This is the Best of Public Radio from NHPR. We're in partnership this week with the Monadnock Summer Lyceum. Louisa May Alcott appeared recently as a guest at the Lyceum, as portrayed by actor Marianne Donnelly. After some stories about her life, the novelist opened the floor for questions, as read by the moderator.
Given your life spent working for the rights of women in the 19th century, could you share with us your predictions and hopes for the status of women 100 years from your time?
That would be 1988. My hopes, I certainly don't know, of course, because I'm not from your time period, but my hopes for the time period 100 years after I would pass in 1888 would be that by 1988, we would have had the vote, which I did, luckily someone quickly informed me that you did get in the 1920, and I would hope that women would continue to know that they best serve men, themselves, children, the planet, and all by being the most profound and real person they can be.
Do you feel that given women's natural gentle nature, that it fits them out better for public life than men's nature?
Let me recount the question because I wasn't quite sure what you said. Do I think women's nature is...
It enables them to participate in public life in a better way than men's nature.
I don't think I have an opinion in that regard. I think that as women become more secure in who they are and feel more secure in their culture and society to be able to study and to fail and to learn from their failures, to grow, to succeed, that they should be equally capable of administering home and country. I think that some men will fail. I think some women will fail. I think some women will succeed and some men will succeed. I don't know that there's a particular preponderance that women are better at any task or less better. Perhaps lifting things, I think. That would be it.
And now we have some questions from the audience. The modern-day story, March, is supposed to be about the Alcott family.
It is not.
Who waited for their father to return from the war. What is your reaction in terms of its authenticity, the accuracy of their life experience?
Considering that it's published well after I'm dead, I can't make an opinion.
Here's another one. How can Louisa May Alcott be a role model for girls today, or any of her characters?
I think that's self-evident. I think the lecture, if you will, that I just gave you says it all. I just think that the modeling is in the books, in the characters. I like people to read my Blood and Thunder tales to get a little bit more perspective on my sense of humor and sarcasm, which I'm rather proud of, my sarcasm. In fact, I will tell it to you like this. In 1875, when I went to that meeting in Vassar, women would come up to me, "May I touch your sleeve for a moment? Thank you." I don't go pawing people, you know, as they did to me. They would come up to me without asking, and they would say, "Oh, Miss Alcott, Miss Alcott, why didn't you marry Laurie off? Oh, to Joe?" Oh, and I would call them lionizers, sleeve-pulling lionizers. And what have I for this? For fame has done nothing but caused me a great deal of disconcern. And it seems to me that I would have to become much more stubborn and resistant as my fame grew. They would even go through my trash. They would photograph and sketch my cat. There was no peace and quiet, and our house was kept like a hotel. So I tell you this, don't become famous. Just become, well, how should I don't want to say wealthy, but comfortable.
The next question is, what was your relationship with your father?
My relationship with my father, Bronson Alcott, as all relationships with anyone's parent in any era and time, is complicated and is very specific to the situation at the time, which would include the cultural implications and the socioeconomic implications. And since we had the good grace to live in 57 different homes before I should pass at the age of 55, I would often be identified with Concord. But you see, I sold Orchard House in 1884 to William Torrey Harris, And I'm so pleased to see that my family was very smart and they bought the house back. And I believe it still stands to this day, the Orchard House in Concord, Massachusetts. I should hope you'd go. You'll learn a lot about me. And you'll see my sister May's paintings protected against the glass on the wall, which I still think is so delightful. And you will see my father's work where he put two houses together on either side. My relationship with him is much like Orchard House. Put together and it still stands. Have I answered it? My father would say of me and my mother that we were the two devils. For it is, it seems, that I have my mother's spirit more in my soul. My other sisters were very ladylike. But I was much different.
The next question, should women serve in our military as equal to men as soldiers and sailors?
I think that I'm incapable of answering that, for I am not a general. I think that that is a very complex question, and there are certain considerations that are beyond the capacity of speaking in public that should be considered, but I think it's up to the woman to decide if that's something she wishes to risk.
Did you know Ralph Waldo Emerson?
Very well. Yes, I did. Of course I did. And his children, who I taught and who tortured me to death. And I wrote flower fables to keep Ellen Emerson, the daughter, very happy, and later would publish those poems and short stories, mostly fairies, fairy tales and such. And, of course, Mr. Emerson, who lived a lovely, brisk 15-minute walk down to the corner of the turnpike, he and my Uncle Samuel May and a number of other people were very kind to generously tuck a little envelope of money behind the bust of Pestalozzi, the educator. Socrates and Pestalozzi's busts were hiked to all 55 houses, big statues, and I believe they're still there in the Orchard House. And behind those busts were little envelopes from Mr. Ralph Waldo Emerson, and he kept us from being completely starving. And, of course, he really rather admired my father's work.
Please talk a bit more about your experience at Fruitlands. How long did you live there? What was your impression of your time there?
My impression of my time there, it was grueling. It was like being in what you would call in your time period a concentration camp. And But it was an ideal that I aspired to, and it was my mother who bore the brunt. As I don't know if I told you, one lady came to Fruitlands, and she looked at my mother, and she says, "Don't you have any beasts of burden here?" And my mother said, "This seems to be but one." That should tell you what it was like for my mother, who had to bear the attitudes of the strange fanatics and lunatics and freaks. But let me not misrepresent the worthiness of the experiment. Let me not misrepresent the fact that my father had the courage to be who he should be. And let me tell you this, when my mother met my father, he was the same man then, oh, that he was always. Oh. And although he might annoy you with his ponderous style, my mother fell in love with him because of who he was. And he was the same man then that he was always. There was no false cover on the book. So transcendentalism was an attempt, that particular aspect. There was also Brook Farm and a number of other attempts at various things. It wasn't a very long experiment. We went up in June and we were quite done by January. At which point we went to Fall River. How much more should I say on it? Oh, good.
Little Women brought you tremendous fame. What do you think was the cause of that?
Good marketing.
This questioner asks, I heard that you aren't fond of your well-known book, Little Women, and that you wrote it primarily for money. Is this true?
Close. What happened is James T. Fields, who had once said to me, Louisa, stick to your teaching. You have not the ability to write. Everyone go, oh! And he had lent me 40 whole amazing dollars and told me, here, let me give you some money so you can go and get ready for teaching. And I looked at him in dead in the eye and I said, should the time come that I shall have the money to pay you back, I will. And I was pleased to be able to hand him back the $40. And I'm also pleased that I kept the copyright, as I mentioned in the beginning of my show. I said to my publisher and such, I know nothing of women, just my sisters and I. And he said, well, give it a go. We think there's a good market for moral books for young women and young children. And I said, well, yes, I'll give it a go. And so I sat down and I feverishly penned it out, and it was published first in England, thank you. And it was actually two books together, Little Women and Good Wives, and you will know it just as Little Women. But I think these technical things must bore you. And by the way, would you please tell Puffin that I was not born in Concord, Massachusetts, which is in the introduction to their book. I was born in Germantown, Pennsylvania, on November 29th, 1832, the same birthday as my father. And I should pass March 6th, 1888, 3 days after my father passed away in Louisburg Square. Yes, I think Little Women is a most important book because it does introduce Jo March, of course, modeled on myself. And Jo was very outspoken, and she loved to run. Oh, and by the way, a little funny story. I meant to tell you, I have a secret. Are you ready? I was married once. Oh, let me hear you. Oh.
How old was married?
Yeah, I was 13. It was in the barn. And I wore a veil, a little curtain for a veil. And I looked at my husband, and I said, well, husband, you must prove your worthiness. I'll give you a head start. And I let him run. And as I passed him, I divorced him. And I've been single ever since. But indeed, I am married. I'm married to my pen. And he has been a most faithful husband. And you should, when you read Little Women, you'll know those cute asides as you go through to Little Men and Joe's Boys and such. And Plumfield, yes, is based upon how, should I keep guessing what you want to hear? So Plumfield was based, of course, on the educational modeling of my father, and I did make a funny little match for my Jo March, and I married her off to Professor Bear. Ah, a warm and kind, intelligent man who was dismally poor. I wonder who that would remind you of.
That was Louisa May Alcott as imagined by actor Marianne Donnelly at the Monadnock Summer Lyceum. Next week, Dr. Willie Shee steps up to the podium in Peterborough to discuss a possible manufacturing renaissance in the country. Till then, this is the best of public radio from NHPR.